you. I have the privilege of working at your GSO office. And now, to start this workshop, will you please join me in a moment of silence in gratitude for the AA recoveries of the last 40 years, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I hope everybody isn't as short as I am, because I'm standing up on my tiptoes talking to this mic. There may be some who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. If so, we respectfully ask that no AA speaker or member be identified by full name or picture in published or broadcast reports of our meetings. The assurance of anonymity is essential to our efforts to help other alcoholics, and our tradition of anonymity reminds us that principles come before personalities. Next thing, order of business says current announcements, if any, and I don't have any. Except to say that I certainly am very happy to be here sharing this meeting with you this morning. Now, I know that many of you have been corresponding with Susan at the office, and many of you have come up looking for her, and some who had not met her before thought that I was Susan. Susan, unfortunately, was called back to New York yesterday by the very sudden death of her father. And we are very, very saddened by this. And so disappointed for Susan that she can't be with us, too. So I think we can say a silent prayer for Susan. This is a workshop on internationalist loaner sponsors, and anybody, of course, is most welcome. We're going to have three speakers this morning who will speak for 10 minutes each, and then I have a few other people we knew were going to be here, and I'm going to call them because I know you'll be interested in meeting them and hearing what they have to say for a shorter time. And then with whatever time is left, I'm going to call on people from the floor. And if anybody has anything special that they want to talk about, if you just raise your hand at that time, we'll be very happy to include you just as long as our time lasts. And the first speaker this morning is a very old and very dear personal friend of mine. I could tell you quite a few stories about him, but I'll let him tell his own first, and then I may tell my own version after he's through. Well, it's a very, very great pleasure to introduce my friend Captain Jack from Maine.
Thank you, Midge. I'm Jack of the Internationalists. On October the 20th, 1947, I came into Bill's office near Lexington Avenue. Two small rooms, two girls, Bobby and Charlotte. I had orders to go to the Far East. I was nervous, and I was looking for advice. The advice I had was that if I was sober, I could go anywhere else in the world and stay sober in AA. The second bit of advice was that letters might help. So I started out for San Francisco to join this old tanker, Algonquin, under the Panamanian flag. She wasn't much of a ship, and frankly, I wasn't much of a man about that time. But I had had 15 months of sobriety on the coast. I went out to San Francisco, and fortunately, I had 12 days there, 12 meetings. The headquarters at that time was over the old Bush Terminal. I picked up with a hobo. He knew the places. I had a few bucks, so it was a good combination. We ate anyway. But on that particular voyage, I was caught in a storm in the North Pacific. It was was a bad storm. I didn't know whether we'd make it or not. And in the middle of that storm, a mutiny broke out between the Arabs and the Filipinos. I wouldn't advise people to go have experience like that for a spiritual experience. But probably I was scared. Anyway, I accepted step three, where I made a decision to turn my will in life, and in my case, the life of my ship, over to the care of God as I understood him. And I can frankly say that since then, I've never had a desire to take a drink. It was a long time ago. I had three books, AA books, with me at the time. One was left in Shanghai, which later was behind the communist block a few months later. Another with a doctor in Singapore, and another with an agent in Abadan in the Persian Gulf. What happened to those books, I'll never know. Because I wrote letters, I had no contacts out there. My good wife sent me copies of the Grapevine, no matter where I was. I was with a large oil company. But that voyage, which was the beginning of the internationalists, so I'm told. I didn't even know what a loner was those days. There weren't too many of us. But somebody out there, a port engineer, said, why don't you call this little group the internationalists? And I suggested it to New York. I looked it up in the dictionary. It seemed good. The person had something in common with two or more countries. And the name is stuck to this day. That particular voyage lasted for 14 months. One meeting in Melbourne, Australia. There were hours of lonesomeness. I sailed with two cases of scotch in my cabin, used for entertaining purposes. I knew it wasn't for me. But the experiences I've had here and the help of the GSO, because if it hadn't been for GSO, this group of internationalists would have died a mourning. I feel sure of that. I tried to carry it on for 4 years. And then I yelled for help. And they, Anne and Midge and others, came to my rescue. And as you all know now, a round robin is sent out bimonthly to about 500 men and a few women, one of whom is here with us. And that's the way we operate. The men write to New York, excerpts from the letters are put into the round robin, and they in turn stay sober through letters and through correspondence. I'd just like to, like a lot of others, I wrote Lois the time of Bill's death. Says, I believe Bill felt that day in October 46, when you and he packed the books in your sea bag, was the beginning of the group known as the Internationalists. Much love, gratefully, Lois. Thank you. Thank you.
Now, if I may indulge just a moment, I want to tell you a story about Captain Jack. I had been in AA less than a year. I came in a suburb of Boston. And I had been going around to meetings in the very immediate area. And whether there was any AA beyond that area or not never even entered my head. Until my mother asked me to come up and spend a weekend with her in Portland. And because I had been going away, going to a meeting every single night, I absolutely panicked at the thought of taking the long trip from Boston to Portland. It's what, about 200 miles, maybe. Jack says, cut it in two, it's 100. Nevertheless, it was the end of the earth for me because I didn't know anything about AA beyond the confines of a very, very small area. So I called the Boston office, and I asked if there was any AA in Maine. And they told me very graciously, and didn't laugh at my question, that indeed there was. There was AA all over the United States and Canada and around the world. And they gave me the name of a group in Portland and told me when I could go to a meeting. So I went to a meeting alone the night that I got there, alone as far as going with an AA is concerned, or knowing anybody when I got there. And this was my first experience of walking into a new group. My mother, bless her heart, went with me. And I got a very warm reception, which was great. But the very important thing that happened to me was our friend Captain Jack chaired that meeting. And as he opened the meeting, he said these words that I will never forget. He said, "My name is Captain Jack. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober 10 years, 8 years east of Suez." This was in 1955. That was a real eye-opener to me. How could this happen? How could this be? It really, just those words immediately expanded my horizons of AA. And this was the very beginning of my becoming interested in service in AA, incidentally, because I wanted to know how all these wonderful things happened. And the result of all these wonderful things happening, I think, will be told to us by our next speaker. We have corresponded with him for quite some time, and I've heard his name, I've read his letters, and I just had the pleasure of meeting him for the first time yesterday. And it's a very great pleasure for me to introduce our good friend we call Lighthouse John.
Thanks, Vince. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is John. I'm an alcoholic. I work in a lighthouse for 8.5 months of the year. I found AA in 1970. I had drunk myself to standstill. I knew nothing about loners or anything like that. I had 2 AA meetings when I had to return to my lighthouse for a further period of duty. And during my 6 weeks of the closet time in the lighthouse, I had no contact whatever with AA. I don't think I had a leaflet or a pamphlet or anything. This went on for ages. But I had no problem with drink on the island because there was no booze there. But when I returned to the mainland, I had a great problem with getting home. But thank God I did get home. As time went on, I was able to get more meetings at home. And I was transferred to Kinsale in 1972. And this was my worst year because the lighthouse is in the mainland. And the 2 guys I work with, they drink like hell. And when they go down, they wouldn't know when to come home. I had their duty to do along with my own. I had plenty of problems. And I had no one to discuss them with. I became great friends then with a member of the Shannon group. And every time I returned home, he'd say, "What kind of a trip had you this time, John?" And I'd say, "Whatever it was, we're never good anywhere." And he said, "If you had names and addresses of AAs like yourself, would you write to them?" And I said, "I would, love to." So he told me about Round Robin and Delona. I'm looking at him, yet. I'd never helped them. Soon after, I got a full list of loaners from Betty. And so, you know, that very day I got him, I felt great. And that night I looked up the list again and I got into action right away. And I wrote 3 letters, was a big thing. But that was a start, and the next night I think 3 more were, and I was stepping it up all the time. And it's now I write about 65 letters now in the past 3 weeks before I came here. It takes a lot of time and effort, and this is my only way of staying sober in the lighthouse. It's through correspondence and of course my higher power. And live my life a day at a time, and I have messages for some people, and everyone has messages for me, and that's the way we work together. Maybe you don't think that one could get such a beautiful life out of the old pen and paper. I don't know whether you write lots of letters or what you do, but I would suggest that you would get yourself involved, because I have a lovely life today, and if I stop writing, well, I know what's going to happen. I'm going to if I set back the square one. Pardon? I was just saying there are only for correspondence, I wouldn't be sober. Yeah. Well, only for correspondence, I wouldn't be sober today. And I get, there's not a day passes where I write a couple of letters or I get a couple. And this is great. I'm in touch with the program now all the time and I really love it. And it's great to be here and to be sober. I'm not very good at speaking. I'm not used to people. I don't see any in the lighthouse. And I would like to thank everyone for all the help they have given me and I'd like you to continue the good work a day at a time. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Isn't that a beautiful power example, really? When I think of going to a meeting every night of the week and all the meetings so many of us have available to us all the time, these people are really such a miracle, and they're absolutely beautiful. Those of us who have been fortunate enough to have either the Lotus Assignment or the Internationalist Assignment in the office, it's just the most inspirational thing, the very beautiful letters these people write. They have to think things through for themselves. They don't get the constant input of speakers at meetings the way many of us do. And they come up with some very, very beautiful thoughts that are just beyond description. We always love to share Lona's and International's letters and thoughts with other AAs. And now my next speaker is a very old and good friend of all of us, Larry M. from New York.
This just read thing here about anonymity. Well, as long as we can't use anonymity, when we write letters, we got to use our name. And my name is Larry Madison, and I don't give a damn or who knows it, who don't. But I first found AA in Sing Sing in 1948. And at that time, the grapevine was two sheets of mimeographed paper that we used to get up in Sing Sing and probably get two copies for maybe 60 or 70 guys who attended that meeting. Well, when I come out, they started the Institution Committee in New York Intergroup Office. And a fellow is dead now, Larry Dawkins, Jack Palin, and Jack Knapp were the three guys that was instrumental in starting groups in the workhouse in New York City. So they had a meeting down in the church there on 21st Street there. The Manhattan group used to meet there. So they got up and they said what they wanted to do about getting volunteers to go to these different meetings. And I was sitting in the front row, and Larry Dawkins came off the stage. I said to him, you're starting a good program, I said, and I wished I could help. And he said, I'm only out of Sing Sing, I said, about 4 months. I said, I'd like to help. He said, stop right there, he said. Before anybody else in this room, he said, give me your name, your address, and where I can reach you. He said, I'm an alcoholic. And nobody's going to kid me about alcohol. He said, but there's going to be guys coming out of prison. I'll have to believe them if they tell me they've been in prison. He said, but they ain't going to be able to tell it to you, he said, because you've been there. And since that time, I've been doing prison work right along. Correspondence, meetings, and stuff like that. And when I go to a prison, I don't pull no punches. Because I tell them right up and down that there's a lot of good people in AA that's willing to help you. I said, but don't go out there and try to use them as suckers, I said, because I'm one guy that's going to stop you. And I had found many in New York that pulled that. And there was one guy down in the group office that used to sit around there for, he was around there for a couple of months. And there was a guy who come in there, shaking, and they call his people, and they get the money to put him in the hospital, and they asked this guy to put him in the hospital, and he said, sure. So what'd he do? He went, the officer on Lexington Avenue at that time, he went downstairs and met the people and got the $75 and took off with it. And I right there, I got a hold of that guy that broke his neck. But they put him in Towns Hospital, and the guy that took him up in Towns Hospital told him about this guy taking off with the money. Instead of keeping his mouth shut about it, the guy went up there for 5 days and he come out and got drunk all over again, looking for the guy that got the $75. So I understand he's down in Cannon City now, and I spoke down in Cannon City last Friday, because I had an invitation to speak down there, and I hit my wife and Hillary went down there. I married, November will be 5 years, and I met my wife through correspondence. I belong to the World Hello Meeting by Mail group. I also get the round robin on the loneliness list because I moved out of New York City 450 miles upstate. And there's many people that we write to. We write over 100 letters a month, way over 100 letters a month. And that goes all around the world. And I don't care how much postage. Some postage I send out cost me maybe $1.75 or $2 just for postage. Now I was going to buy 13 of these big books of bills, but the 850 is a little bit too much for someone retired now, but I got four. And one goes to Africa, and one goes to India, and one I keep myself. And there was a fellow that, in Buffalo, Iowa, that took care of Fort Madison and Anamosa, Iowa, and he had a stroke, and the people out there in Davenport, Iowa, don't go near him. But on my way out, I went down and I seen that guy, and on my way back, I'm going to stop and give him one of them books. But I have a list of 13 people that I want to send around the world a book to. And I know to send them books there, it was going to cost about $15. I don't care how much it cost. And I'll tell you why. Here's a picture of a guy in Tanzania, East Africa. I don't know how he got my name. He was sober a month. He got my name. I answered those letters. He wrote me another letter asking questions. I told him to find another drunk. I tried to help him. I said, and when the two of you get sober, I said, find a third and help him. I said, when you get enough together, I said, ask the priest in the church if you could hold a meeting in the church. Well, he misunderstood the letter. And what'd he do? He got up on Sunday morning in front of the church. And he spoke 45 minutes to the congregation about AA. So I had given him Susan's general service. So Susan wrote me a letter and she said, please write that guy and tell him. She said, don't do this in AA. So I sent him the leaflet on sponsorship, and General Service sent him the 12 traditions. So I got a letter saying he didn't understand the traditions. So I sat down and I wrote a 6-page letter explaining the traditions. Now he's 21 years old, this guy. And the letter I got back from him, he signed the letter, your student, Albert. So you see how important the letter is. Now I'm writing to another fellow in India. And he put another name in here of a fellow that's doing a life prison in Australia and asked me to write to him. Well, I wrote to him. But he ended his letter this way. You are a special friend of mine, and letters we exchange. Yet never have I seen your face. To some this seems so strange. Your place is here within my heart. This too may sound unique. We share each other's finest thoughts, yet never have I heard you speak. For this, the friendship we possess, we owe the male a debt, and I thank God for you each day, though we have never met. Now, I sent that to Susan, and I think she's going to put it in the next loners' meeting in the Gazelle. She said they don't put poems in that, but this is so unique, that what it means to a letter to this guy, that it just shows you what a letter can do to people. And I wrote many of people, and I have got no answer from them. If you write a letter, or you receive a letter from somebody, and they haven't said what you want to hear in a letter, at least send them a postal card and say your letter didn't do me a damn bit of good. Stop writing. But at least answer the letter. Because, as I say, the wife and I write over 100 letters a month. Now, I'm writing to a guy in England, in prison in England. And he was writing to a girl in Kentucky, and he hadn't heard from him in quite a while. He wrote me a letter, and he said, there's a girl down in Kentucky, Pee-wee Valley, Kentucky, doing a life bit. Would you correspond with her? So my wife wrote her a letter, and she'd been writing back. There's a girl up in Canada, in Kingston, Ontario, that we have been corresponding with for a couple of years. And they had a meeting up there that started at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and landed at 9 o'clock at night. So my wife did most of the speaking with her. Her parents had disowned her. So she adopted us as her parents. And her letters come, Mom and Dad, and she signed it, your adopted daughter. You don't know how much a letter means to many people. I'm retired, and as long as we got enough on the table to eat and can pay our light and gas, I don't care how much we spend on mail. Now, we bought $18 worth of stamps here, and I sent out about 25 cards, mostly prisons, and I bought them folders of Colorado, and I sent, I think each one cost me 50 cents a piece to send to Africa, India, Australia, and two to England. As a fellow we write to in England, we were sitting at the table one night getting ready to go to bed about 11:30, and the phone rings. My wife, Hilda, picked up the phone, and he said, this is Joe. She said, Joe who? He said, Joe Moore in England. And he spoke on the phone for over a half an hour. I don't know what it cost him, but he spoke. And then he sent Hilda a little medallion about the big as a dime. And she said, gee, if I had another one, she said, I could make a beautiful pair of earrings. She's wearing them today. And he sent the other one. So I'm going to get her the book and send him one of them books. But before we left, I got a letter from him, and the letter was a check for $25. He said, take Hilda out to dinner when you get to Denver. Now, this is AA working long distance. And believe me, I've had a lot of long-distance AA work in New York City when I was on the institution committee. I've gone to hotels and pulled them out. And a guy going to Texas had come back from Germany, was in the army, and got drunk. I went down to Traveler's Aid, and they didn't want to do anything about it, and I raised hell down there because they said, you got a big ad in the paper about how much money is needed to keep Traveler's Aid going. I said, this guy's sister will accept the charges in reverse. So when I went up and got the guy in the hotel, I burned down his Traveler's Aid. He said, well, there's a train going to Chicago. There's an 8-hour layover. I said, that's no good. I said, Chicago's got... So he looked it up, and the next train was going to Kansas City. I said, that's it, because Kansas City is dry on Sunday. So I went down and intergroup, and I brought him down, and we kept feeding him coffee. He had a bottle, and I said, don't throw the bottle away. I said, keep that bottle, and don't get off the train. So when I got down to Intergroup, I called the clubhouse in Kansas City. I told him the guy's name, what train he was on, what time he was supposed to arrive there. I said, when you guys get down there and meet him? So they went down and met this guy at the train, kept him for 3 hours and put him on the train to Dallas. And I got a telegram from his sister following week. She said she didn't know how to thank me for getting back to down to Texas. And I got hell off Dallas because I used the phone in the office. You don't do that, but I paid for the phone call. I got the charger and I put it in the kitty in Intergroup. So every year after, I get a postal card from this guy, and I say to Dallas, here. She said, what's that? I said, that's the guy I said I made the call to Kansas City for. So you see, we don't know how AA works. And I'll tell you another story how AA works. I come into the group on a Saturday, and he was secretary down there. And there was a cabinet and ladies room that fell off the wall. I used to be Mr. Fixit down the intergroup office. That's where I got my best of sobriety, was in the intergroup office in New York City. She said, Larry, can you think you can fix it? So I went in and looked at it, and it was put up there with roll plugs. So I said, yeah, I tried the wall with a screwdriver, and I found I could put toggle bolts in. So I went out and I bought 4 toggle bolts. And there was a guy sitting on the end down there shaking. So I had to measure the holes, so I said to the guy, get off your buttonholes. So I marked the 4 holes, and I knocked the holes through, and I put the toggles through the holes in the cabinet. And when I was ready to put the cabinet up, I couldn't hold the cabinet and screw the bolts. So I said, get up. I said, off your butt. I said, you ain't finished yet. So we got up there, and he held it, and I got the first 2 screws caught. He walked out. A year later, Eve called me into the office and she said, did you see this month's grapevine? I said, no. And this guy had wrote to the grapevine saying he was sitting down in New York in the group office shaking and he was planning on committing suicide. That he was no good to anybody until some big guy told him to get off his butt and hold a cabinet. So you never know what you say or what you write that's going to help somebody. So I mean, you people here that's loners and correspondents, answer your letters when you get them. And as I said, if you don't like what's in the letter, just write a postal card and say you didn't help me any. Forget it and don't write no more. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Larry. I'm going to ask Sailor Tom and Clip S to come up here and sit in these chairs. That'll release 2 chairs from the floor. I wish we could do more. If anybody wants to sit in the edges along here, by all means do. If you want to move up this way a little bit, it'll help the congestion down at the door. And if anybody can think of any other way we can help, I'd be glad to hear it. It's just marvelous to have so many of you here. I just think it's great. Is there anybody here got a jackknife? Anybody here? We want to open this package. Hi, jackknife. That's our shipping department. No, no, no. I want to put them out. So precious to me, anyway. We have a few pieces of various kinds of literature of interest to loners and internationalists and those who are interested in them. And you're welcome at the close of the meeting to take it as long as it lasts. I wish there were enough for everybody, but I'm sure there would be one piece of one kind or another for everybody. The next person I want to call on is an internationalist and a friend of many of us, Cliff S.
Thank you very much. My name is Cliff S., Cliff Sutcliffe, as a matter of fact, and I'm an internationalist and an alcoholic. I had been kicking the program around for about, I suppose, 18 months. 7 of those months were very happy, and then I got a little wise about it. Well, it wasn't until one midnight meeting in New York, when a very small man walked in and was asked to talk. He was a boy who was a seaman and on his way home after a lengthy voyage. And it was the first time I'd ever heard of the internationalists. And afterwards I spoke to him about it, and he told me of this group known as internationalists. And it was the first real thing that I had identified with, because I'd been a seaman and wanted to go back to sea. The next day I called up, I forgot whether it was Anna or Beth that I spoke to, and I learned about this group. On that, I went down, got myself a job, took about 10 days, on a coastwise run before going out to the Far East. When we got back to New York, we lacked one man in the crew, one ordinary. And I was standing across in a slop shop across the street from the pier. And who should walk in but this very small young fellow. And I asked him if he had a ship. He said, no. I said, well, you've just got time to make the 3 o'clock call at the hiring hall. And he did. He had about 15 minutes. Presently, he was back. We got board ship, and very soon we're on our way out to Japan, India, a few other places. Well, the first thing I learned was that this boy and myself had really nothing in common, no taste whatsoever in common. All we had was AA. And we didn't talk very much aboard ship. There wasn't it just wasn't done. And, however, we both would nod to one another in passing. And both of us had what was then published, a directory of internationalists and the ships in which they were sailing. Now, soon I got into the habit, when standing watch, of waiting for a ship to come along, spotting its name and pulling that directory out of my pocket and seeing if there was anyone aboard that ship who was an internationalist. And sometimes it was, very often it wasn't. But it was a good feeling. It was a meeting, even if it were in the Pacific or wherever it happened to be. Another thing I did, based on this chap's information and sense, he had a list of people, loners and some groups, all the way out to Japan and down to Kuala Lumpur. And he made a practice of sending an air letter ahead to each port that we'd come into. Not in one of those ports where he had an address did anyone fail to turn up. I mean, that someone was down there to meet us. We couldn't both go ashore at the same time. On some occasions we did. But there was a strong bond. We met people of many nationalities. And it's just like going from one group to another here in the United States, or anywhere else in the world for that matter. And you had a positive identification with people. Later I got on the New York Bermuda run, and I'd been to Bermuda many times. The first place I would head for was the Long Tail Bar, and that's as far as I got in Bermuda, in spite of the years I've been going there. My first trip there as an AA was an absolute revelation. The first time in my life I'd ever gotten to inside the home of a Bermudian. And now, our friends there in Bermuda, there are many of them. My wife and I go out there as often as we go, and, well, it's just a whole different world. Now, one other thing I'd like to say, and that is that this business of corresponding with loners is a very rewarding thing indeed. As was said a few minutes ago, not everyone writes the kind of letter you want to receive, and perhaps you don't send the kind of letter that they want to receive. But the contact, the love, and the strength that is to be derived from people who are in isolated places is an experience that I'd love to share with you. I haven't the time now, but any of you, I believe, who can spare the time, a little postage, and want to get involved sponsoring some of these lonely people, or let us say people who are merely loners, I wish you'd get in touch with GSO and volunteer for that sort of work. Thank you very much, all of you.
The next person to share with us is another internationalist, and he has the most delightful name, Sailor Tom. And Sailor Tom comes from Brooklyn.
My name is Tom, and I'm a drunk. And but for the grace of God and the help of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm sober for another 24 hours. I'm just grateful to my higher power and you wonderful people for keeping me sober a day at a time. You know, it's hard for a seaman sometimes to get sobriety. And I always say there's only two kinds of people that understand me, and they're drunks and sailors. Number one, I'm a drunk, and number two, I'm a sailor. I've been a seaman going on 20 years. Been around the world. Through the use and abuse of alcohol, I lost everything I had. I lost my union book. Worst off, I lost my self-respect. Made the Bowery in New York. Several institutions. I was almost sent to a prison for the criminally insane for threatening to kill three police officers under the influence of alcohol. I drank everything from shaving lotion to canned heat, which I learned to drink in Delaware State Hospital. I was on the verge of being a wet brain. I had peripheral neuritis of the legs. I was almost paralyzed. If anybody was to tell me 4 years and 2 months ago that I'd have 4 years and 2 months sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have told him, no way. I made several meetings in institutions for about 3 years, drinking wine, going to meetings drunk, or something kept on dragging me back. Because I didn't totally surrender. I wasn't sick and tired of being sick and tired. So after I finally achieved sobriety, I got my Z card back, my Siemens papers, and a Group 2 union book. Because I wasn't eligible for Group 1, but I finally got that back. And I went down to Union Hall and I seen a ship going to Bombay. It was a sellout job. We went down to Houston, Texas, for 6 weeks, where we loaded rice to bring to India. And it's in Houston where I got interrogated with both feet at the 24-hour club and the wonderful fellowship of Houston. Now, I rode ahead with the help of the World Directory to Durban, South Africa, to Bill S., my first meeting overseas with 3 months sobriety. And Bill came down and picked me up and took me to my first meeting in Durban. And then I had to go to Bombay. We were 40 days at sea. I got into Bombay, I got a hold of Ignatius P. At that time he had 12 years sober. And if I never witnessed these people staying sober in India, the way they stayed sober, because I'm Irish and I'm thick, and I don't think I would have stayed sober. Now, some of these people were extremely poor people. But they had sobriety. And above all, they had a simple four-letter word. Love. This is when the war of Bangladesh was on. And they had air raids at night. Blackouts. And we held hands going to the street at night to make an AA meeting in St. Francis College by candlelight. And you could feel a higher power in the room. I'll never forget these days. And then we went off to Kaohsiung, Formosa after spending 6 weeks in India. And we sold a ship to the Chinese for scrap. And I called up Bill W., who had 25 years sober. Poor fella just passed on, died of cancer, but he died sober. He was an ex-seaman. Came down to the airport and spent some time with me. And I came back to the States, flew back. Since then, I've made meetings in Rota, Spain. I've made them in Naples, Italy. Made them in Hong Kong. I've made them in Japan. In Kobe, sitting on tatami mats in a man's house, drinking tea. With an interpreter. Telling my story, and they're telling me their story. And one of the Japanese gentlemen said to me, "Tom, you know, you don't understand Japanese, but you keep on making these meetings." And I replied, "Yes, because it's the language of the heart. It's one drunk talking to another drunk. Where the clergy try to reach me, they couldn't do it. Where psychiatry try to reach me, they couldn't do it. The only people that ever reached me was another alcoholic who's been through the same mess I've been through. I've made meetings in Hong Kong. I attended their 5th anniversary last year. In Kaohsiung, Formosa, Larry talking about the loners. There's Father Joe, a Jesuit priest who has 5 years sober in AA. He's the only lone member there. Him and I had a meeting for 2 days. Out in the audience, there's Jack P. and Bill. And it was been sober quite some time. He was chief engineer on a ship with me. And he celebrated his 7th year of sobriety while we were at sea. I'm just very grateful to you wonderful people. I'm grateful to a man like Captain Jack, who was one of the forerunners of AA. For without this program, I would perish. God love you. Thank you.
Okay, now there'll be a few seats up here if some of you would like to come up and take them. And I'm very, very happy to... Wait, I promised I'd make an announcement first. Is there an Edith L. from the mobile camper group here? If she... Edith, are you here? Sorry, Rosa. From India.
My name is Joe. I'm an alcoholic. You are right. So many people refer to Bombay, India, and I am the man who hails from that city. Do you have meetings practically right round the clock? It might come as perhaps an incredible fact of life. When I came into the there were three sober men. You heard the name of one mentioned by Tom a few minutes ago. There were three factions, three groups consisting each of one man. And that was the only group. And if you think that we are here by accident, forget it. In a land of 500 million people, I should be in that city, and I should discover this tremendously united group consisting of three heading three groups. And one of them was grateful enough to make a 12-step call on me. And it was he who introduced me to the World Hello Group, of which Larry M. spoke so eloquently. In AA, the one thing that we do learn is that truth always prevails. Many of us find it very difficult to accept God and institutionalized religion. If you could substitute God by this word truth, you have it made. If you and I could only see ourselves as we had allowed ourselves to become, we would know that we cannot continue to live. Our program tells us honesty is the first requirement. And if honesty was a gift, if we could have it, we would see it, that we cannot use alcohol and live successfully. I am particularly grateful to AA because my AA came through correspondence, through GSO and through the group World Hello. If God did not inspire these people, they could not discover that I was the phoniest man under God's earth. You know, if you are not certified asses, I am. Three universities certified me as an ass. I have degrees to prove them. So I used to write lovely letters to all kinds of people. But through all those lovely words of eloquence, they saw that I was a struggling man trying to conceal the problem of my life. You cannot receive sobriety unless you are willing. And to have willingness, you have to learn to obey. And what do you obey? The law of your being. And what is that law of your being except truth? Not one of us here can give a reasonable explanation why we were born. And if you can give a reasonable answer why you were born, then you are God himself. The truth is, you and I have an obligation to discover why we are here. And it is only AA that helps you to see at least the first glimmer of the beginning of an answer. And it redounds to the credit of members in AA humanity on the scrap heap, to speak to one another in terms of truth, not in terms of scholarship, not in terms of pride, but in terms of humility. Again, another word for truth. You cannot receive unless you are willing. And you cannot receive at all unless you have accepted that you need something. Till you put your hand out, you cannot receive anything. And which alcoholic do you know that was willing to receive? He's always a man who is prepared to give, answer every question, because he knows it all. Long before the question occurred, he had the answer. So we have to come back to school of humility, where we deal in truth. And the truth, like the surgeon's knife, cuts, tears, not to hurt, but to bless, not to destroy, but to build, and finally to bless. And now there is a lady who was in Honolulu, and I used to write to her. I don't know up to this day what mystic power she had. She wrote back in two sentences, "Don't waste my time." And the next sentence was, "When you are ready to speak the truth, please do. I will still be here." And it was the greatest gift of God to me that it was possible for me to see her face to face, once in Honolulu and the other time at the last convention, and tell her, "I am alive, Mother, because you loved me enough to tell me the truth." Those of you who think that to write to another is a pain in the neck, that it is a tremendously a costly effort, remember that your life was given back to you. I came into this program in 1962. I have 13 years for which I have yet to make restitution. My life was given to me for no good reason that I know. There is nothing that I can do for another suffering alcoholic which will compensate for what has been given to me. My life is a... My breath is A. My friends are in A. In this strange land, 12,000 miles away from home, I have 25 friends here. And I can go to any home, and that home is open. And I get love. Love without question. Love without cost. Love that knows no pain of giving. Because each one of us is bound by this chain of love. And like the little pebble that is thrown in the pool, the ripples go on and on and on. As one very wise man said from Brooklyn, when he visited India, very wise man. He was in South Africa. He was a black. And one of the mining chieftain said, "Will you come and speak to my people? Maybe listening to another black, they will listen." So this man, Brooklyn man, who had 13 years of sobriety at that time, said, "Of course I will." And they went to this mine. And the boss, who is a ruddy, white-faced man, said, "Well, I have brought a great man from Brooklyn, New York." And everybody said, well, they thought that they would speak in Swahili. And here comes a black man who speaks only English. So, the boss had to translate what he said in English into Swahili. And the white man said to him, "How wonderful it would be if the whole world could only accept AA program and live by it." What greater tribute can be paid to this program other than this? We have nothing to sell except the truth about ourselves. And when we are sober, what wonderful guys we really are. By the grace of God. Thank you.
you, Joe. See what I mean about these people? They're really the greatest. Now I have the very great pleasure of introducing another old friend, first by the mail, and he has traveled a long way to get here to this meeting today. Jack M. from New Zealand.
My name is Jack, and I'm an alcoholic. Oh, alcoholic. Yeah, can you hear me? No. First of all, you know this, thank you. You know this serenity prayer? Every morning we say, give me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Well, the thing you cannot change is my Australian accent. You've just got to put up with it. First of all, I just want to say a few words about this because this is something very close to my heart. My first few years in AA, I was a loner in the Australian bush, and for long periods I was without any AA contact at all, barring GSO and World Hello. And I was a drunk that everybody rejected, and I tell you what, the impression that this has stuck with me all these years, that when I first decided that there's only one course for me to take, and that was to join Alcoholics Anonymous. GSO wrote to me and they said, Jack, we're so pleased to have you. And they sent me a big bundle of literature. Well, you know, for someone that's been rejected by everybody all his life through booze, for these people to from the other side of the world to write to me and say, Jack, we're so happy to have you with us. This made a tremendous impression on me. And then a little later, Polly, whom a lot of you know from World Hello, she wrote to me. And she said, Jack, we'd like to have you join our group. And I'll tell you what, I was a cook, you know, and I was working in a little country pub, a little flea-bitten pub out in the bush, and the previous arrangement, all the cooks that had ever worked there, they got their wages in booze. Well, I was a kind of a phenomenon, you know. I was a cook who didn't drink. And I'd only been sober a few months, and how the hell I stayed sober, I'll never know. But along came this letter from Polly Dorr one day and said, Jack, would you like to join our correspondence group? We hear that you're a loner out in the bush. And I'll tell you what, this impression of this letter and the letters from GSO made such an impression on me that I've never, ever forgotten them. And I'll tell you what, as Larry said a while ago, if you get a letter from a loner, please answer it. Thank you very much.
Is Barbara P. from New Jersey here? Okay, I hadn't seen you earlier, Barbara. We've heard from the loners and what the letters mean to them. And now I'd like to have a loner sponsor share her experiences with you, Barbara.
Yeah, I've only got 3 minutes, and I have no voice. I have laryngitis, and I'm scared to death. I don't think I would have come to this if I'd known this, but in AA, you try anything. I went in to visit GSO a few months ago because when I came into this program, I was a typically selfish person. And if anybody mentioned anything about, you know, GSO or intergroup, I wasn't interested in that. Help me. You know, I'm suffering. Help me. I don't care about this. You just run this yourself. But I had grown up a little bit in the program, and we had some difficulties in, you know, having factionalism and people wanting to run the meetings because this was their meeting, their group. And so I went into GSO to see what this was all about so that I could, you know, speak not from what I thought it was, but from what I found it was. And, oh, what a wonderful place to go. Everybody had time for you. They cared about you and about answering any questions. And it was wonderful. And when I went into the and talked to Susan about the loners, I thought, isn't this wonderful to think I'm so fortunate. I have all these meetings I can go to and all the people I can depend on every day. I went to all the psychiatrists. I buried a psychoanalyst. He couldn't take it any longer. And I went to a psychiatrist and I tried various religious groups and everything else, and nothing worked. And I was such a defeatist about myself when I approached AA that I just couldn't even listen, so I botched that up for several years. But since I have been sober and in it all the way, head and feet, I've really been happy and loved it. And I thought, how can these people do it on their own? And I just felt so much for them that I thought, I'd like to write to these people and I'd like to hear from them. And so I signed up, and then I got home and I looked at it and I tried to write a letter, and I thought, now what are you going to say? Who do you think you are anyway? And then I decided, no, you've got to pick a name and you've got to write a letter and you cannot look at it afterwards. You just have to mail it. So I looked through the list, and I've always loved islands and always loved lighthouses. So I picked poor John, and I wrote him a letter. And Susan had told me, now don't be disappointed, don't expect answers. And so I didn't. And I wrote John, and I wrote somebody else, of course, who was on an island to begin with, and mailed that. And one day, it wasn't too happy a day, and I came home, and there was an airmail letter, and I thought it was from a friend of mine who lived in Wales, because I didn't know anybody else who read. And I opened, and it was signed John. And I was so thrilled. I mean, I was like a teenager, you know. I just heard from her favorite idol in the movies or something, you know. I was just thrilled. It was just wonderful. And I could have, if I'd had time, I would have sat down and written every other person on the list and never cared if I got another answer, because it was just a wonderful feeling. And it was just a marvelous feeling to me to feel that you could touch out and reach any part of the world. That it was all united through such a beautiful thing as AA. Thank you very much.
If any of you are personally interested in becoming loaner sponsors, I suggest you write to GSO, P.O. Box 459, Grand Central Station, New York, New York, 10017. Susan will get the letter, and she will put you in touch with loaners. If you know of anybody to whom either the loaner or the internationalist service would be helpful, please do the same thing and let us know. Now, Larry has just suggested that I give the mailing address of World Hello Meeting by mail. Unfortunately, I don't have that in my head, so Larry will give it to you.
All you have to do is write, "Well, hello, meeting by mail, 117 Lincoln Park Drive, Syracuse, New York, 13203. And every month, you'll get an 8-page, about that long, from people all over the world who write in. The only requirements is that you send a letter to the group every 2 months. And of course, like every group, the stencils and the paper and the stamps, we all try to send in a buck or two a month or whatever we can afford to keep that meeting by mail going, and that's the only requirements there is to it. One letter every 2 months, and that's it. Yes, sir. It's 117 Lincoln Park Drive, Syracuse, New York, 13203. Well, hello, meeting by mail. We have a well hello coffee room at the Cosmopolitan Hotel, and the room is 732. So anybody is all welcome to come over and meet. Well, hello, people will be there, because we'll be there for the next 3 days. Thank you.
Now, on a slightly different note, a friend here from Hamburg, Germany. I do not have his name, but I would like to have Bob. Okay, Bob from Hamburg, will you come up and say a few words to us?
My name is Bob. I'm from Hamburg, Germany. I'm an alcoholic. Well, actually, Martin put me in a tough spot because I was not prepared to speak here. And I was just going to say, I've been thinking of coming to Denver. Martin talked me into this. I've been with AA for 4 years now, and I found sobriety, and I found life. And what I'm finding here is friendship. I'm finding love. I'm finding understanding. And this, what I'm experiencing here, is adding what I say to the third dimension. And I'm so grateful that I can now sober stand here and speak to you. Thank you.
May I see the hands of any AA loan members? Not loan sponsors, but are there any loan members here? Okay, will you come up and say a few words, please? We have time now for one loaner and one internationalist. May I see the hands of any internationalist who may be in the room? Okay. I will let this gentleman introduce himself.
Hello, my name is Vern. I'm a kid. I'm a Canadian, and I live in Malaysia. And I'm scared. I came into the program in Canada, and I did quite extensive traveling before I decided to go elsewhere. I went to Malaysia. There was no AA there. So, shaking like a leaf. So, I had lots of prospects. I work for an oil company. We have lots of people that should be in the program. And I decided against going as a loner because I was sure that I would get somebody into the program. In January of this year, I finally gave up on the idea of getting someone else into the program, and I wrote New York, and I said, you'd better put me on the loner's list. About 2 months later, I received pamphlets and replies, and by this time, a man had approached me and said, I think I have a drinking problem. And so now I have another member in Sarawak, in Malaysia. For me, this is very good. And I hope that he's continuing sobriety. People say they can't attend meetings as a loner. And I guess I feel that way. But I have a way of attending meetings. I have one meeting with my higher power, which is a continuous meeting. But then I have one with these prospects. And all the guy has to say to me is, have I ever got a hangover? Come here, pigeon. I got a word for you. And you realize that I have cleaned up most of the hangovers in Borneo. I really don't have too much to say. I am very happy to be here. I'm very happy to be with this group. And I'm very happy to be sober today. Thank you very much.
And now you know why we have AA in 94 countries. It didn't just happen. I think it's just fabulous. Now can we hear from our internationalists?
Hi, folks. I'm Bert. I'm an alcoholic. This has been one of the most rewarding things I've ever had happen. One of them. The first one was on Guam when I first came to AA. I was in the service that time. And these people talking about the letters. Good God. I wrote to Ann, Eve, Marty Mann, when she's in the office there. These people all corresponded with me. And I remember one time there was a letter came out in the grapevine from a fellow named Three Finger Jack Hartley. It was on Marshall's out in Kwajalein. He'd been there a year and a half by himself on this island. And he said that he had two meetings a week. The mail was delivered on Wednesday. And he and the book and God sat down and read the mail. And then on Friday, he answered those letters. And that's when he had his second meeting. And I figured, boy, if that guy can do it, I sure ought to be able to do it when I can get a hold of AA sometime. You see, I got transferred from Guam to a heavy cruiser. I was in the Navy, as I said. And I was on a ship with 800 drunks, and there's one alcoholic. I, too, was running scared, as they said, about going out to the Far East. That was my first cruise, too, in AA, from San Francisco out to the Far East. And in San Francisco, I ran into a fellow who was really shaking it out, and I figured he needed the big book, and I gave him my copy of the big book, and so I shoved off without a copy of the big book. And I was shaking. We hit Honolulu, and I got a hold of an AA member there, and he lent me his book. And he said, now, when you come back, he said, bring the book back to me. And I did. And it was marvelous. 9 months. And I ran all over Hong Kong looking for AA. It wasn't there then. I spent 3 days, actually, running all around Hong Kong. I had contacted, there used to be a priest, used to meet the ship's boats as they came in Hong Kong. And I thought if anybody knew, he would. And so I asked him about it. He said, no, he says, we need it here, but I don't know of any group that meets. So I went to the police. The police agreed, too, that this is true, that they needed it. But they didn't know of any group. So I went up to the International Correspondence Club. It's right up the head of that funicular railway there in Hong Kong. And I sat around there, and I figured if anybody would know, it would be these reporters. They always got their nose in everybody else's business, and they'd probably know what it was at. You know those guys drugged me all over Hong Kong for those 3 days? There's people from every news service in the world. Now, they were not alcoholics, but they wanted to help a guy who was trying to stay sober. We found one place that's down on the waterfront, and I'm sure that some of you have seen it. It's called the AA Bar and Grill. That is the most disreputable waterfront outfit you have ever seen, and they've got some mean ones in the Orient, and it looked like it. But since then, there's been an awful lot of water under the bridge. Now, I don't have my name on the internationalist list, nor do I have it on the loners list, neither one. I'm on this oceanographic research expedition at present, the Deep Sea Drilling Project. I'm an engineer on the Glomar Challenger. This thing is going into its 8th year now, and I've been around AA now since 1954. And I've been able to meet with these people all over the world and correspond with them. And I have just had the most wonderful time last night down here. I was walking down the hall. Here came somebody from Cape Town I ran into that had been at a meeting down there. I was at a meeting once in Dublin and met a fellow that I had been at a meeting with in Durban. You talk about the hand of God being on somebody's shoulders. Tom gets up here and starts talking. I believe I was at the meeting down in Durban that he was talking about. We recognized each other. I know it was. The fellow next to him comes from Perth, Australia. And I was there, too. And I ran into him at that meeting. He looks awful familiar. But you know, it was in New Zealand that I got one of the most beautiful little sayings that I carry around it with me all the time. There was a young Canadian soldier there whose tour was up. AA member. I went to this meeting in Christchurch. And at this meeting, this little soldier got up and says, well, he says, I've got my orders. I'm going home to Canada. And somebody says, well, how are you going? He says, well, I'm going from here to Fiji, and I'm going to meet some friends in Fiji. And then I'm going to Honolulu, and I've got some friends there I'm going to meet. And I'm going to stop off in San Francisco and meet some friends. And one of the people at the meeting says, my God, you must have friends all over. He says, who are they? He says, I don't know. They're AA members. I haven't met them yet. But I just get so filled up with this love that they're talking about here. To me, this is my conscious contact with God as I understand him. The caring, the sharing, and the love that we have for each other all over the world. I've been to meetings where I couldn't understand a word that was said, but the feeling was there. We love you. You're an alcoholic. Thank you.
For just one brief minute, I'd like to have Dave from Japan come up and give us his greetings.
I joined AA in Tokyo And for the first time in my life, for a long time, I was told that I was wanted. That was a beautiful feeling. Before, nobody wanted me in any way, shape, or form. And AA in Japan comes and goes. It gets bigger, it gets smaller. But happily now, we have meetings every night of the week over there, and we'd love to have anybody stop and say hello. Thank you all.
To me, this meeting has been the most beautiful example of AA at work. And all of you, those who have participated and those who have attended and been with us here, are just a beautiful inspiration to me, and I want to thank everybody. And now will all of those who care join me in the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass.